three committees, the South Complex has convened, that we're not even, not all of us are here, are supposed to be here. For the minerals and energy are also supposed to be here. They are not. So I guess this is the full bench. Just want to welcome you. But before we proceed with our agenda, well, I think we're there. With me here is the chairperson of the Public Enterprise Portfolio Committee, Honorable Magadla, Kaya Magadla, and on the other side is the chairperson of the Select Committee on Appropriation of the NCOP. We are also dealing with the matter that we are looking at the moment. So they are setting up their bioscope. While dealing with the bioscope, let me just give the background to today's meeting. The Minister of Finance, Honorable Tito Mboweni, presented the 2017 Special Appropriations Bill, which basically gives the special appropriation for ESCOM. So we've had a number of presentations from National Treasury and many other bodies. We then thought it prudent, Honourable Minister, that we should get it from the horse's mouth to exactly what is happening, what is being funded, what are the problems, to allow the Honourable Members an opportunity to engage with your good self, chairperson, and also allow yourselves to interact with us. By any measure, the special appropriations that we are dealing with is quite a huge amount of money, and with serious implications not just on your debt, on the debt level of the country, but again there are some risks that we're seeing, as you know, the debt sustainability of the country and so on and so forth. So the implications are quite huge, hence all these committees and honorable members of Parliament to decide with you today. So we've agreed with the Minister of Public Enterprises that if you look at the agenda, we've said that there's going to be a presentation by Public Enterprises and presentation by ESCOM. But in our conversation, we just thought it's in any case the same presentation. So it's good that the Minister is here, will allow ESCOM to make the presentation. As after having posed questions and our input, then since this delegation is led by the Minister will decide who answer those questions. We did receive some apologies, and Honorable Mashang will just take us through those apologies that we got.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to Minister, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, and the team from ESCOM. We have the apology from the Minister and Deputy Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy. The Minister, Honorable Mantashe, is attending the Cabinet Committee meeting, and the Deputy Minister, Honorable Shoma, is attending the Mineral and Energy Committee meeting. We also have an apology from Honorable Veli Okam, who will not be available for the rest of the week. That's the information we got. He's not around. The other apology is from Honorable Karim, who's attending a joint committee on finance that is processing the tax rolls. The other apology is from Honorable Liliet Mamarekhani, who is also not in the province, is in Limpopo. Those are the apologies that we have with the formerly Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you. There's also an apology from Honorable Kaiso, who's off sick, and Honorable Mendana, who may join us, but he's also having a doctor's consultation.
We've also received an apology from Ms. Dehale for the family to make an
appropriate. You, let's note and record those apologies. Minister?
Good morning, Chairpersons and honorable members. As you correctly point out, Chair, the Special Appropriations Bill was presented to the National Assembly by the Minister of Finance at his discretion. And this happens in a context where I think the country recognizes that Eskom is a vital entity and utility which provides 95%, if not more, of the electricity supply to the country, and therefore is quite crucial to the economy as a whole, and of course to citizens who have access to electricity, which is a huge majority of our country as well. Secondly, I think it's well known that Eskom was one of the targets of state capture, and a huge amount of operational, financial, and structural damage was done during those years. And thirdly, that we are, if you like, since the last 2 years or so, or less, in a period of recovery from that damage, which would also involve the governance issues, financial issues, operational issues. And as the President pointed out in several of the State of the Nation addresses, the question of the business model. I think colleagues will recall that he said, I think fairly early on, that many of the entities impacted by state capture will not be able to trade their way out of trouble, meaning if they carry on doing business as usual, they are not going to find the money to pay the debt or, in many cases, even the liquidity or operational expenses that are needed. So it's in that context, Chairperson, that we then look at, firstly, the efforts being made by government since last year to get, firstly, the governance component right by the board that was appointed in January 2018. There have been management changes since then, and new managers will be put into place as the process is concluded by the board. Thirdly, we've had any number of financial issues, and the chair of Eskom, together with the colleagues from Eskom, will take you through how we got to the point that we are at. But we can't deny the fact that Eskom at the moment carries a huge debt of 440 billion rand that increases every day. But equally important is the liquidity challenges that it faces. And as they will explain to you, they would have run out of money, so to speak, by the end of October had we not made the two decisions that government made. The first is the 23 billion rand a year for the first 3 years, but hopefully continuing for over a 10-year period. And secondly, what is contained in the Special Appropriations Bill. Lastly, Chair, the Chairperson of Eskom's board and current acting CEO will take you through the financials as they were presented recently of the last year, but also some of the contextual financial challenges and where and how the money that finally Parliament decides to appropriate will in fact be spent. We will then avail ourselves to any questions that you have subsequently. Looks like the word bioscope is still not, the bioscope is still not functioning. I thought that word only applied for older guys like us. So we have the copy of the presentation was submitted to the committee just for the record yesterday evening, but the person who received it is unwell. So you've got the glitches that we currently have. Have you got it? Okay. So with your consent, Chairperson, Mr. Mabuza will then take them through the presentation.
Thank you, Minister. Mr. Mabuza, will all your please introduce your delegation so that you know who's here. Honourable members, the presentation was received yesterday. That's why we usually request that presentations be brought to us at least a week before, so that you can interact with those presentations and such unforeseen circumstances are properly mitigated. But honourable members seem to have some questions. Honourable Peters? Okay, let's see it from your side, Honourable Oscar. Okay. We know you deal with energy, Eskom, but please, Kevin, let's try to lower the temperature. Usually, when we're in these meetings, honourable members complain about the cold aircon for the first time, either it's because of Eskom or it's because of the nature of the matter we're dealing with today. It's a hot matter, so you may find that it also raises the temperature of the room. Can the staff attend to the temperature, please? Honourable staff.
Can I just get clarity? Is this the document that will be used, the hard copy? It's a 27-page document. A 29-page document. I'm not sure. I think there's a separate one.
No. Let me explain that. Right. We agreed with the minister that initially there were two presentations which were going to be made, by public enterprises and then by Eskom. But you then realize that they are presenting same issues, right? So we agree that only Eskom is going to make a presentation. So it's not the document that you are having, Honourable Sir, that's a delay that this is the free content. Yeah, that this is the hard copies of the Eskom presentation. But are we ready with the slide presentation? Mr. Mabuza, welcome. Please also introduce your team. Thank you.
Chairman, thank you very much, honorable members. Good morning. I'm accompanied by the CFO of Eskom, Mr.
Mabuza, just a second.
No, Chair, I was addressing my note. I was just noting that on my way out.
Okay, no text. Thanks.
Yeah, you must keep some of the things under wraps, Chair.
Until you come back.
Until
you come back.
Sure.
Okay, excuse. Honorable Mabuza. Why incorporate what
co-opted? Thank you, I appreciate it. Thank you. I was saying, Chairperson, I'm accompanied by Mr. Kasim, who's the CFO of Eskom, and I've got the executive in charge of generation with us, Mr. Beginu Maloy, just behind me. The little challenge that we're having with the technology, Chairperson, is the presentation shows on all the screens. When we try and enlarge it, we lose it on the bigger screen here behind the chairperson. So it might well be perhaps let's try work with these screens that are on the walls while they are printing the hard copy.
Perfect. Let's do that. Honourable members, can you please focus on the small screen?
Yeah.
And if you have got a problem, please indicate to us. I think that's been left to all of us hardly use this venue. NCOP, I'm not saying anything about NCOP, Honorable Mamata. We have to use this venue. Would you allow us to continue nevertheless? Thank you so much. Okay, we're using the three skills, three screens. Let's concentrate on them and let's get started. Honorable Dien?
Chair, I think the team is interrupting as it is trying to fix the problem. And I thought we could proceed with what we have.
So what I said, please don't fix the problem now. Let's go. The three screens are fine. We're going to concentrate on them while waiting for the hard copies. That's what technology can do. So that's why you must always have the old ready papers with you. Okay, that's fine. Mr. Mabuza, I think we can start now.
Firstly, in response to the letter from the committee on the methods to cover, I would like to address first as a backdrop the 2015 special appropriation, the state of the business today, and the case for change. And explain briefly what makes the 20.7 billion rand loss that we reported at the end of March 2019, and just to restate the way we are approaching this, with the caveat that some of the details of how we seek to address our financial issues, we would want to give some highlights without going into details that might inadvertently preempt the President's paper on ESCOM that he should be releasing in due course, and then our program of how we intend to deal with one of our bigger challenges with this municipal debt. And then move on to the current appropriation that is in front of the committee. Chairperson,
will an hour be fine until the presentation that is until past 10 or until past 11? So that you allow the other members.
It should be enough, Chair. We won't use that amount. So, Chairperson, the historic part of the injection of 23 billion and 60 billion in 2015. Here we demonstrate the impact that it had on the financial ratios from 2015 to 2016, the various ratios being the interest cover, the gross debt to EBITDA ratio, the debt to equity ratio, and the debt service cover ratio, which improved from 0.8 to 1. The stake for this is just a backdrop, background of what happened to the 2015. The current situation that ESCOM finds itself is definitely unsustainable, Chairperson. And these are the hallmarks of an unsustainable enterprise. The first one, our debt situation is reaching 450 billion. The cash that we generate from the business, which is from the EBITDA line, we are not able to service the debt. Hence, we find ourselves having to borrow to pay debt. Through which, Honorable Peter, so this, it's not that hard copy. It's not on the hard copy, this presentation. There may be elements of it that are in there. So it might help while they are preparing the hard copy through you, Chair, that the presentation I'm doing is the one that's on the screen. Apologies again. I was making the point that we in a situation that we need to borrow money to service debt. Our revenue over the past 10 years, increasingly so the last 5 years, has actually been flat to about 1% per year. The tariffs that we have received over the period has not been cost reflective, and I will explain this concept the way we understand it. On the other side, we have also had a ballooning debt that we have not been able to collect, which is now in total about 38 billion rand. And I will explain what goes into that 38 billion rand. This such that our costs, our operating costs in the last 5 years have increased by 30%, reaching 151 billion in F19. The big driver of our costs is in people-related costs, in coal costs, and the IPP costs, IPP payments that we have to pay. On the operational side, regrettably, at the back of an aging plant that has not been maintained over time. Our energy available factors have been dropping to late 60s to definitely below 70, and this has exposed the plant's ability to provide electricity at the least cost, which has led us to load shedding in certain instances, and have increased the costs to avoid load shedding. And we have also, because we could not be able to supply the required demand, we have lost revenue, and the credibility that the whole institution has. Our model, our business operating model has been found to be outdated and quite stretched. We cannot continue to operate a utility under this model. These old and the outdated models are part of the heavy weight that drives this organization like ours to itself. Our operational structures are inefficient. They are definitely not for the now. They are opaque. There is no transparency, there is no ability, even from a management point, to see where efficiencies are, where they are lacking, and how to drive those efficiencies. Mm-hmm. And the environment within which we're operating is a changing environment. There are new technologies ranging from the various renewables, storage, microgrids, and the customer has many, many other options. Talking about the loss, Chair,
just can I interrupt you? Colleague, why is there no shading in those lines? Did you see them, Masad? Did you see them? Just come and check. There's nothing. They're just not readable. Can you correct that? What? Natasha, did you see that? You know what we're complaining about? Did you see that? So can you correct that and allow the chairperson to continue with his presentation? Just go and get the correct thing. Okay, can we? I think we're just on the right group when we're relying on technology and the Powerscope. The Powerscope was working while we're still waiting for hard copy. We'll just concentrate on the Powerscope, okay? And, Honorable Chitoy?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I know that you mentioned earlier that the emailed copy was sent to someone, but obviously we've got a copy in the presentation. Could we just maybe send it to the secretaries of the two committees, and then they can just by press of a button, send it through to us. All of us, we've got our cell phones and tablets here. Then we can view it immediately. It will just be much easier.
You heard that? Yeah. I think the other members are saying, can these things be sent on their image and then they're going to get it from their iPad and from their cell phone. Okay. Will that work? Can we attend to that? Yes, sir.
Thank you.
A few minutes back, something like 15 minutes back, I sent the presentations to all members of the Select Committee on Appropriation.
Can you just interact, Zamin? Can you guys just come together and make sure that all members receive the person saying that is sent to the Select Committee? I've put the Portfolio Committee Public Enterprises here, Standing Committee on Appropriation, and I'm sure there may be NH, but let's just make sure that we send to all members who are here. Since some of the members already have it there, just make sure that we send to the two committees. Yeah, can you please attend to that? So, and don't interrupt us now until that thing is done, because you are just disturbing the chairperson's line of thinking. Chairperson, yeah, please just attend to that and don't come there to us.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was trying to make the point about what is behind the decline in our EBITDA and the impact. I don't intend to go through these numbers line by line, but suffice to say, When our EBITDA is being affected first and foremost by the IFRS 15 and some of the pre-commissioning capitalization. The point is where we at now, the auditors refuse to recognize on the income statement revenue until we have collected the cash. So the auditor's argument is we have demonstrated consistently inability to get the cash from the municipalities. Therefore, it can no longer be called revenue. So they refuse to have it recognized in our financials. And some of the plants that are coming out of commissioning to operation, the way they have to be treated for depreciation purposes is now having to change. Our primary energy continues to be a big driver of cost. In the particular year, that 99 billion versus 85 billion was driven, and I do break it down on the next page, was driven by and large by us having to buy any coal that we could find from anywhere when we our stock coal levels were depleting to way below green coal last year, and in trying to avoid the load shedding having come from the stage 4 load shedding, we have had to use more of the open cycle gas turbines, which meant we were burning a lot of diesel, and we also had to use a lot of the IPPs, which then meant both in volume and also in the diesel cost of the IPPs. Our employee benefits also was a big driver. Members would remember that this is against the 7.7% over the next 3 years, starting last year, that we had settled with the workers. So this was the first year that that full 7% went into our numbers. And I did speak about the depreciation. So that is, and our finance cost as a result of our increased borrowings. So I have spoken about the IFRS. I do not intend to go into much detail on these on the actual 4% and these adjustments, but suffice to just highlight that our sales have been decreasing, particularly in the mining and residential categories. Other categories are remaining stable. Our international sales have also reduced, and we have also had a very small increase from 85 cents per kilowatt hour to 90 cents. And a big chunk of that is taken off by the volume of 3 billion, and the variance in the numbers being 7 billion. On the primary energy cost, this is where we detail how we have grown from the 85 billion last year to the 99 billion. You will see under the coal, we have increased our cost by 6.5 billion. A big chunk of that is driven by the volume, and the other part is driven by price. You can see the 3 billion that we in our own OCGTs and the renewables and the IPPs OCGTs. That makes the 14 billion difference between the 85 and the 99. On the cash flow side, our cash, as I indicated, is not sufficient. The cash we generate from our operation is a negative of 36 billion. That is we generate 33 billion. We need 69 billion to service our debt. That gives us a negative of 36 before we go borrowing. And then this 58 billion that we see here has been the money that we have raised from borrowings last year. I don't have to go further on this waterfall chart. Just to make this point on our municipal debt, this graph here, on the one side, it shows in the blue bars the actual rand number of our municipal debt. It's important that members understand these are two graphs. The top one deals with all other municipalities. The bottom one deals with Soweto specifically. So these numbers have now become the same. In round numbers, we've got just around 19 billion in the municipalities and a similar number in Soweto. But of significance worth noting is that green line indicates the decline in the repayments over time. So can see that more pronounced in the Soweto situation below there, which speaks to this culture that is now regrettably setting in society. There is absolutely no need my neighbor should pay for power when I get power for not paying for it. The sad part about this, Chair, is I don't know where South Africa will stop on this. We cannot continue to think it will stop on toll roads, on electricity, on water. It's going to go all over. There is no guarantee that it will stop in public sector services. So to us, that is more worrisome than the quantum as a percentage of our sales. So we are having discussions at the interministerial team to address the municipal debt. It's unfortunately been painstakingly slow, and the yield has not been that much encouraging. We also, in as far as Soweto is concerned, try and engage the communities whilst we continue to be exposed to our staff being attacked and the equipment transformers being exploded. So, Chair, really, we only have three sources of funds. It's money that we generate for our own revenue, the borrowings, and shareholder support. We have demonstrated that our revenue has falsely looked like it's increasing, driven by tariff increases, not driven by increasing sales. That's what we're trying. That's the point we're trying to make. Our borrowings have increased to levels that are unsustainable. Hence, we are in that debt trap that we continue to borrow to pay debt. Then shareholder support, which is what brings us here to continue to come back to the shareholder. Ideally, our revenue should be sufficient for Eskom to wash its face, really, to be able to cover our capital, at least over the life of the asset, and cover the interest. Our debt funding has exceeded 440 billion. We at the ceiling now. Eskom has not recovered. It's prudent and efficient cost. Through you, Chair Minister, has been hard on us to break this down and question the prudence in our cost. So we have not been able to recover that in tariff. Sadly, we also have not been able to get a fair return on our assets for many years in the pricing policy. So sadly, the only short-term option that is now left, we've run out of borrowing abilities. We're not generating the revenue. We are left with the one other option in our funding, which is the shareholder support. We will not be able, on cost savings alone, to solve Eskom financial health. The only long-term solution is to hopefully reach a point of to migrate to a cost reflectivity on our pricing. Let me also say this, the costing and the cost reflectivity debate is not helped, Chairperson, by the fact that some of our big users, the mining houses, the big smelters, the big manufacturers, that take about 35% of our energy and contribute 35% of our revenue, are now reaching a point where the cost to them, as their tariff to them, is becoming unbearable, and it's driving some of these to close their businesses, with the unintended consequence, though should be expected, that when they close, the impact on the economy, the impact on the jobs, the impact on the rate base of those municipalities where they operate, and indeed the impact on communities. As an example, we told that the smelters' energy contributes about 60% of their cost. So even a move by 1% price increase is 61% to them. And yet they are being offered some incentives in other parts of the world to come and set up their smelters to import chrome ore from our country and go and beneficiate at a cheaper electricity cost. So this elasticity problem in price increases and demand is starting to also show those of our customers that can pay and can find alternative energy sources, they're coming off grid. So we're really caught up in that bind. Just one comment on the return on assets. Our return on assets should at least be equal our weighted average cost of capital. Our historic return allowed by NERSA is way less, hoping between 0 and 0.9%. Yet our own average cost of capital is over 7.1%. So also there is a very peculiar way in which NERSA has sought to treat the last support we got from government as announced in the budget by the Minister of Finance over the 3 years of 23 billion per year. They've sought to take that and treat it in a different way. Therefore, our liquidity situation has gotten worse in the manner that they treat it for the purposes of the multi-year price determination. So even at 7.1%, that is low from our own calculation, which reflects a higher WACC. That slide in the bottom just shows models of what happens when you take a certain allowable return on assets. The next slide is too much detail, but what it does show, it shows what our peer utilities globally on their price and their cost. We are at the bottom there, that's blue, the last blue. The first one is the country, the second one is Eskom. Here I point out that these comparators are not only developed countries. They also are countries like India, Chile, Indonesia, that we really are not recovering a cost-reflective tariff. The business community, their own calculation comes at the 108 cents. The energy users come at 118, and the IRP had modeled 116 cents per kilowatt hour versus the 90 or so cents that we are getting. Just what we're doing, how we intend to start to deal with those things that are addressing ESCOM's challenges. Really, in a nutshell, Chairperson, we seek our strategy and our approach seeks to stabilize the organization, to take it to a point where you can stabilize it first, then separate it for the in taking the line of march from the president, and then talk about growth. This stabilization deals with our debt, the debt relief, which today's session is part of that, and indeed the work that is being done by the CRO, which the president will share more light on this, and how we manage our revenue, and how we contain the costs that are in our control. It is becoming clear and true that revenue, we can do just so much. The only thing we can control is our costs. But that said, you cannot reach sustainability by cutting costs. We see the benefit of separating the business in the various areas, one to de-risk the concentration of the current vertically integrated utility that comes with problems emanating from one part of the business, sinking the entire business. But also from a management point, it enables us to have clear line to look at each of these businesses in their own income statement, be clear where efficiencies are, where they are not, why they are not there, and deal with their efficiencies in a clear and a direct way. And I have spoken about the business model. This would unfortunately need a high-performance culture. This would need a different way of doing business at Eskom, first and foremost. Would need a certain agility, would need a certain sense of agency and a sense of purpose that is followed by set performance targets and consequences that follows non-delivery on those targets. To continue to engage our stakeholders, to let them buy in, at the very least, let us all be in agreement of the problem statement. Not waste too much time wanting to go back and find out what caused the problem. Just agree, this is our problem and we don't like the way we look. This is how we propose to deal with it. Others may have different ways, but stop debating about how to deal with it. Finally, take one part of it and execute on that. And then when the organization has been stabilized, we can go back and try and deal with what caused the problem in the first place. And, because whilst we're doing this, the industry, the energy landscape is not waiting for us to solve our problems. By the time we finish this, there will be no customers. So we need to together co-create an industry and the market structure. This is certainly what from the executive we are trying to get our employees and all of Eskom guardians to buy into this approach. So we have developed a plan that unfortunately cannot be dealt by Eskom alone. It has government, it has got Eskom and government, it's got government on its own and Eskom on its own. The first bucket deals with our debt. I've spoken a lot about that, which is that relief that we seek, and today is the start of those numbers. On the revenue management, we, from our side, we need to work with government to deal with the policy, being mindful that some of the decisions that we need to take have got social political undertones and overtones. We need to get our costs reduced. We committed as management to reduce our costs to about to 33 billion rand by 2023, and thereafter have a run rate of 33 billion rand less out of our cost centers. This is going to be painful. It's going to be difficult. There is no solution that is going to come about without some pain sharing. Customers will have to take pain. Employees will take pain. Executives must take pain. The shareholder is taking pain. The lenders are taking pain. The suppliers of our inputs must also take some pain. Our drive is to hopefully reach the point where we can now have an energy availability factor of at least 78% in the next 3 years. For now, our continued focus is to make sure we continue to supply power. Our focus is one and one only, that we do not have load shedding. That is what we currently are focusing ourselves on. It is going to come at a certain cost. Because the cost of load shedding to the economy, to the country, is just too costly to contemplate. We have spoken about the need to separate, as the President has said, these three business units. We here are working with the Ministry and the Department. There is work that is being done here that the President, when he announced the Eskom paper, will give more details and color on that. So this, Chairperson, is more to say benchmarked with other utilities, what is a sustainable debt level for any utility? So the range is between 4.2 to 5% as a multiple of EBITDA. That is, if we're generating 40 billion rand in our EBITDA, we can only carry a debt of 200 billion in our balance sheet. So we need to, on the one side, increase the EBITDA, on the other, which comes as a result of increasing revenue and reducing costs, and also reduce our debt. But it is imprudent not to have debt in any balance sheet. So these debt levels we will have to maintain by also ensuring that we do not we continue with our build commitments of Medupi and Gusile, which we will be completing to full completion by within the next 5 years, and also at the same time continue to reduce that debt that would be reduced once this come on stream. They should be giving cash back into the business that we should use to our maintenance OPEX, and also start to address our environmental issues, where we have modeled for now a 57% compliance, which is still way below what we should have been at this point. I do not intend to go into too much detail here, except to indicate the numbers here, that the 49 billion that we're talking about in this current year is the 23 billion that was provided for in the budget, and the 26 billion, which is part of this discussion, added to the 33 billion next year, and the 23 billion times 3, 23 is the 69 billion that was provided in the budget in 2014 February. So I'll pass there just to illustrate how we arrive at the 128 billion. Here, Chair, I don't intend to spend too much time other than to say the things that are within management's control in varying degrees of revenue, to continue to drive our short-term growth, grow our international sales. The debate we continue to now have is, while there may be demand for our international sales, on the other side, we need to check our own capacity here at home. The Minister of Finance and Energy out of Zambia has commented that they would be wanting to come and buy another $128 million of energy per week from us. That, while it is attractive to pursue the sales effort, we need to also first look after our own demand here at home. Our cost efficiency, there is scope in our procurement. There is definitely a lot that can be done in our procurement. What we procure, how we procure, whom we procure for, how we continue to manage our contracted suppliers over time, there is a lot of inefficiencies that are in our system. Inefficiency in terms of turnaround time, inefficiency in pricing, we really are seen by some of the suppliers as sitting duck. We have captured the price taker in most of our supplies. I was talking to a certain gentleman yesterday who makes an interesting observation, that you go and look at just the mining houses that are pure export, and you look at their offices, and you look at those that are supplying domestic, you look at their offices, you will tell who's making money, who is not, who is efficient, who is not. So the EFCOM executive leadership would need to have some very interesting conversations with our suppliers. We all have to take pain. We are going to take pain. So is everybody. We also appreciate that the suppliers want, the customers want a predictable price path, a price that they can plan their future on. So we cannot stop start. Once we commit to a particular price path, we've got to host that. But also suppliers on the other side, they would need to help us eat some of their own costs. On the operational improvement, there are a lot of things we've done on the generation side. We've put a lot of work starting last year with our 9-point plan. We have also embedded some of the work that came from the ministerial technical review team in our approach. In the distribution, the infrastructure continues to be under threat from vandalism. We're starting to see that also in transmission lines, vandals go and literally chop the pylons. In the last week, we have had a situation in the Roodepoort area, and we've also had a similar situation in the Nigel area. So our infrastructure continues to be under threat. So we need to continue to look at their fit for purpose condition. We accept that if maintenance was not being performed on generation, chances are it was not performed on the line side as well. The unfortunate impact on this chair, loss of generation means you just don't have power in a certain unit or in a certain power station. Loss of transmission can take an entire community out for an extended period of up to a month whilst you're trying to bring those lines and those pylons back. So transmission is a bigger, it's got a bigger reach on a bigger consequence on failure. Spoken about primary energy, which under the pressure of finding coal anywhere, for we've taken any coal from anyone we could find it and paid whatever price we had to pay last year. So the short-term contracts we've entered into that are locked in our pricing for the next 2 years, we gives us time that our stock levels are at sufficient levels now, except for one power station. All we now averaging about 50 days, way beyond our grid code. The challenge we now have with the comfort of being not out of supply, we now have the ability to go and negotiate with the time and the space, the quality and the quantity of coal that we need going forward. We have every intention within reason to try and match the life of power station with the supply, that we don't find ourselves in another 3 or 4 years in the same situation we find ourselves. Also on the logistics side, we remain vulnerable with the road transportation of coal, and not so also only on cost, but with some of the protests that have been taking place. Truckers have been caught in the crossfire of these criminal activities, that we had to also limit the time and the access to our power stations. So we need to first and foremost try and get our coal on conveyor belts. Secondly, where we can't, go to rail and use road as the very, very last resort. And continue on our balance sheet to rebalance our commercial and our social mandate. We are ever so mindful of these and the tension that exists in the two mandates. We continue to go to NERSA, challenge NERSA where we unfortunately have no other way of dealing with our disputes with NERSA. It's not provided for in the law. The only way we can deal with our differences is to take them to court, and court processes take that much long, and they also take a long time. You have to wait for their reasons, their decisions, and their reasons for decisions to take those on review. We do hope to persuade the IPP office to open a discussion about our negotiation on some of the commercial terms of our IPPs. To the extent there are assets that are non-core, here I'm now getting to an area where I would like to rather defer to the President's special paper on ESCOM. I have spoken about what we've done and what we continue to do on our nine-point plan. The one point I need to just emphasize on our nine-point plan, it has worked. It continues to get us back to where we should be, confirming that if you focus on something, get people to do it, measure it, it does get done. So we are focusing on that. We have moved the coal point. They used to be prepared for rain under point 8, fixed coal stockpiles at 9. All that is now taken under 9. Under 8, we're putting on the agenda a focus on our emissions. Just to make a closing point on we are turning to our emission situation. We have not complied with what we said we would do in 2010. We have not done that in 2014. The extension we got to 2019 is now on us. So we have had to relook of what is it that we can really do that is achievable, which we are working, and we intend to engage the Environmental Affairs Ministry on these. We've got better quality of coal. We think there's a technology to address this. Some of our old emitting plants needs to be taken to be retired. So the combination of technology, quality of coal, newer plants, and taking out of our base the three other power stations should help us. Chairperson, we'd like to say that today we are close on the 170 days without the need to load shed. We continue to pray for luck, pray with us. Good progress is being made in improving our new builds whilst dealing with some of their latent and their design issues. Ingula is now operating almost at full capacity. Last week we saw the synchronization of the last unit one at Medupi. So we're on course later with more expenses, but we're on course. Work has started to repair some of the big pipe leaks that we had at Litabo, which we hope that the unit should be back by December. Minister did refer, we have started to fill in those critical vacancies. We have now a group executive for generation. We're now looking at the level just below that group executive. We are reducing our reliance on open gas turbines with the usage of diesel. I was told the other day that diesel costs these turbines consume 14 liters of diesel per second. So we have replenished our stocks on coal. The focus is now that we have just unveiled our summer plan, which we is going to be a bit more difficult than our winter plan, given the flat profile of the demand curve. So we have put all those plans in place. I don't intend to go into too much detail, either than to this is just the detail of how the 23 and the 60 billion of 2015 was utilized. Except to say the only thing that has not yet been compliant, all the lights are green, the only thing that has not yet been compliant on is we have not yet disposed of the finance, the Eskom finance company, which we committed to do that by end of this current financial year. Chairperson, that is my presentation. I don't know if the CFO wants to correct some taxi accounting.
CFO, what did you say?
don't have anything at this stage.
Minister, Deputy Minister.
Take a question, Chair.
Thank you so much, Chairperson of ESCOM. Honourable members, going to be our turn. There are many of us, and I would like to give everybody who wants to raise an issue to have an opportunity to do that. So it's very important that we should be very frugal and economic with the time. Time yourself to make sure that the other members can still have an opportunity to speak. Okay, I'll give you numbers. Number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Did I see your hand there? 11. 12. You have got your numbers, and as Eric said, please be economic with your time, so that we can give more time to the minister and the chairperson and their teams to respond and clarify certain issues. I'll start with number one.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation, and maybe before we go into the question, just to pass greetings to the minister, the DM, and the team. Now, Chair, I'll start first by...
Honourable Matap, can I request honourable members just to introduce themselves? I'm sorry, and so that they can be able to note your names as they take the question.
I beg your pardon, Chair. My name is Honourable Matapa. I'm from the African National Congress, and I serve in the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Chair, as I was going into my submission, we picked up that there are costs that are escalating at Kusile and Medupi from the original budget. Can the team share with us the extent of the problem and if there is the forward planning in terms of how we're going to address those particular challenges? The second one, Chair, is on the issue of IPPs and the costs that they bring with to the entity. We'll also request that we are taken on board in terms of the extent of the cost of the IPP, and if there is any plan to mitigate the impact of that particular cost. And Chair, as you say, we need to be economical with the time. I will leave those issues that I would have wanted to raise, given that on the sidebar input that the Chairman has made a touch on. Should later on I feel that maybe I need to come back, I'll request to do that. I'll speak on the one issue of the human capital element. I see it identified in the 9-point plan to turn around ESCOM. Are we comfortable that the kind of crop that we have currently would buy the high performance environment that the chairman wants to introduce to the entity? Because in your submission and the present wish is to separate the entity. Do we have a plan to reskill, to retrain, to upskill, so that whatever new vehicles that we are building, the staff companies will be able to buy into it and be committed to the objectives? Because I'm sure that whatever restructuring that one embarks on will have a direct impact on the labor force. So I think that it is very important that it is run in tandem with the turnaround strategy on the generation part alone. Let me pause the Chair for the moment. Should there be other issues, we'll request to come back. Thank you very much.
I'll just bring up my colleague here. Sarupin, I'm a member of the Appropriations Committee for the Democratic Alliance.
Honorable Sarupin, I know he likes training. It's Honorable Sarupin.
Sarupin.
Yeah, so that they can do it.
with an N at the end of another G, because then Sussurik takes on a very different meaning. Chair, I've got a couple of questions with regards to... Chair, I have a few questions with regards to staffing at ESCOM. And Chair, let me ask the following. With regards to headcount of staff at ESCOM over the last 10 years, or the last 15 years, how has that grown relative to its ability to generate electricity? Because there's constant criticism that ESCOM is top-heavy, that it's bloated, that it hires the wrong kind of staff, that it does not have enough boilermakers, artisans, engineers, but it does have more than enough of every other kind of staff member. And so what is its vacancy rate of its critical posts? And then, Chair, I think what's quite important is that we weren't given as well was the amount of bonuses paid over the last 10 years when ESCOM was the victim of performance bonuses and ESCOM was the victim of state capture and so on. And what attempts being made to recover losses from ongoing investigations and so on? And then with regards to cost overruns and dodgy procurements, I'd like to get the idea of the financial impact of that. And per kilowatt hour of cost, tariffs, not cost reflective, what amount of that, of your cost, is as a result of the cost overruns, of the issues around dodgy procurement at ESCOM, around capture and so on, because that is probably a significant portion of the shortfall that requires a bailout now. So I would really like to know that. And then, Chair, just with regards to the restructuring, do we have any idea when the President's special paper in ESCOM will actually be forthcoming? Reference was made to it several times in the presentation. It would be great to get an idea of the concrete date as to when we can actually have a look at that paper. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. A.M. Sheikh Imam, member of the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Let me start off by saying, first of all, we talk about the challenges that you have faced in supply chain and the impact as a result of state capture. Can you tell us what measures you've now put in place to deal with this issue, particularly in the supply chain, given the fact that we have been told that you have contracts that continue to run pre-1994 up to today at very high cost to ESCOM. In terms of the municipalities, could you give us some idea as to what percentage of the municipal debt should have been prescribed or how old it is? We're trying to establish that if it is current debt, it's one issue, but if it's 10 years or 20 years, then I don't know whether we should be taking it into consideration or not. Now, with what you're saying to us here, clearly, with the restructuring officer coming into place and things, it's not convincing us that indeed you're going to be able to turn around ESCOM in the near future in any event. Given the fact that you're being honest, you're being open, you're telling us what the challenges you are facing in terms of generation, in terms of your capacity, in terms of your revenue, which is declining, not forgetting, of course, that whenever there is load shedding, particularly to municipalities and things, your revenue is going to drop in any event. So given the fact that the challenges you are facing, and this is not just financial, it's also operational and many other aspects, where do you see us going? Where do you feel, can we expect some kind of even break-even point? Is it 5 years from now, 10 years? What further assistance you think ESCOM is going to need in terms of financial resources to get to that stage? And I think what I'm trying to find out is there at any time in the future we're going to expect ESCOM to be viable? That's the other thing. Now, the cost, we've been advised repeatedly that the cost you're buying from IPPs and what you're selling, there's a major difference between them. You're buying cheaper, or you're buying more expensive and you're selling cheaper. I don't know if you could perhaps comment on that. Some of the stations, you've only got 20 days supply. Can you tell us what impact that is going to have and what measures you're putting in place to ensure that you bring that up in line with the rest of the country where you have about 50 days stockpile? I think let me for now stop the chair. We could come back if necessary. I have some luck. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Umzabo Teles. I just have two questions. First question relates to the municipal debt. I just want to find out what caused ESCOM to fail to recover these billions of money and what practical steps are they taking to try to recover them?
That's the first question. My second question raises stability of ESCOM. The chairperson spoke about a need for a sense of agency, a sense of commitment, and so forth. Currently, do they have such so that we can be seated here satisfied to say, from now going forward, at least they've got committed people there for the sense of agency and the like space?
I should have started with Honorable Wittelis for obvious reasons. Continue.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Dennis Ryder. I'm a member of the Select Committee on Appropriations. And I represent Gauteng. First of all, I think it's I want to welcome the fact that we're speaking openly that Eskom was a target of state capture, and in fact one of the major vehicles of state capture. And I think that then the minister and the chairperson must acknowledge that there are going to be trust issues. You know, we go back to the Who song, "I Won't Get Fooled Again," where they say, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. So we don't want the new boss to be the same as the old boss, but we want to have good oversight over these issues. So let's, for the sake of argument, say that we're happy with the additional appropriation. I think that the big issue needs to be that there needs to be absolute transparency in terms of the conditions of additional funding, and regular reporting, which can indicate the adherence to those conditions. And I think that there was some indication about the turnaround plan, et cetera, but I'm not feeling that I've got a full grasp on exactly what Eskom is planning to do to make sure that this money is being spent and we're not going to sit in a situation where we find ourselves never getting out of this black hole that we're in at the moment. I think that it's important to note as well that EBITDA is positive. And even when you take depreciation into the EBITDA or depreciation on after EBITDA, there's still a small positive to the issue. So I'm wondering then why there is so much talk about the need for increasing tariffs. Because based on that statement, that EBITDA is positive, it means that you are funding your costs and you are sustainable. Okay? The debt issues are the ones that have got you into trouble. And those debt issues are where the state capture has gone. And now forcing South Africans to pay through the tax, through the additional appropriation, and then increasing tariffs is kind of a double whammy. So I hear what you say about pain sharing, but I'm extremely concerned that the pain sharing is going to be, well, you know, I'll take a slap on the wrist, but I'm going to stab you in the back, or in the heart, as it were. Okay, so I think that we must be very careful not to abuse the taxpayer and the end user. I didn't like the comment about not going back to find the cause or spending too much time going back and finding the cause. I thought that was a little bit offensive. I think we need to know the causes of where we are now because we can't continue to make the same mistake. And a lot of that goes into the procurement processes and where procurement has been become extremely expensive because we're paying premium for developmental issues, which haven't been developmental at all but have been, you know, certain people enriching themselves. Is there going to be a review of all the existing contracts and future contracts to make sure that there is affordability built in and value for money, I think, is the important part. I also wanted to talk about another point on the increased tariff discussion is that, you know, if you're looking at declining collection rates, but you're still talking about increasing tariffs, what you're doing then is you are further punishing the few people that are compliant. So, you know, let's go with the easy targets or the soft target and milk them for all they're worth. And I think that's an easy way out. It's not a fair way out. And yeah, I'm very uncomfortable with that discussion. I think that fairly sums up what I'm saying. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Minister, Deputy Minister, Board Chairman and Acting CEO, one and the same person. Just from my side, I obviously have got a deep interest with having done the Eskom inquiry, and so very briefly, I've got a huge number of questions, but I just want to focus on one or two central issues. The one relates to our diesel, and Minister, you remember raising the concerns about middlemen. What has been done in the contracting to exclude the premium that is paid to middlemen. The budget for diesel, what was the budget for the year and how much has been spent? The second is the coal. I understand, I think it's one station, Creel at the moment, has got an undersupply of Creel. The rest are up to 50 days, well done in that regard. But the quality is a concern, and of course the transport costs, which brings one back to Minister, an issue which we've raised in the past, and that is your conveyor belts, Hendrina, like conveyor belts not working at Hendrina from the mine to the power stations. Madubi could soon be having hundreds of trucks where there should be a supply from the nearby mines. How is one going to address the transport issues? Okay, then of course the issues of the hugely escalated cost of Kusile and Madubi. Well, we see 161 billion now is the increased price of Kusile and Madubi, 145 billion. Does that estimated cost include the repairing costs? And how long will it take? Is it estimated that it will take for them to be the defects corrected and for them to be maximum reliability, that 40% now? And then, Minister, the litigation, how far is the litigation against the contractor, Takashi, for those defaults? Chair, there are just one last issue, and that is the emissions. Chair, you mentioned the emissions. Are there any power stations that have turned off the ash filters to increase outage? If it is so, I'd be very concerned, because obviously that has a very detrimental impact on the environment and those that have lung problems. That was in the media, and please be upfront if that is the case. Any power stations that have turned off the ash filters, I understand for maintenance, but if it is happening to increase power outage, please, we need to know. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Natasha Mazzoni and I am a member of the Public Enterprises Committee. Chairperson, a few things have come up that have deeply disturbed me. One is when the Chairperson and acting CEO of Eskom says we must pray for luck. I'm not in the habit of praying for luck. I don't think that is a good practice. I'd like to see us having actual plans on the table that don't result in me having to be superstitious about turning my lights on. Chair, there are a few things that we need to have a look at very starkly and very clearly when it comes to the situation that we find ourselves in now. We've got to the point where Eskom, and it's been said by the President, by Minister Gordhan, by Minister of Finance, by Minister of Energy, that Eskom now poses the biggest risk to our country and the country's economy. We have now seen bailout after bailout, and we are pouring money seemingly into an endless pit. It gets to the point, and this is the problem that I have with the situation, it gets to the point where there is just no money left to give. And we are fast approaching the situation where there will be no money for us to give. And yes, this specific appropriations bill allots a certain amount of money to come to Eskom. And I can guarantee you, unfortunately, that in 12 months' time, we'll be sitting in this room and we'll be having the same conversation about the next tranche of money that Eskom requires. Now, Chair, I once went on the platform in Parliament and I said, and I maintain that I was correct in saying that what Jabu Mabuza and Phakamani Khadebe had achieved at Eskom was epic. And I think that what they achieved was epic. It was fantastic the way things were turned around at a time when things were absolutely dire. But now we require a different level of guts and determination. Chairperson, at a point ideology becomes something that only a politician could possibly be interested in. Because when it comes to bread and butter issues, for example, if I pay 100 Rand, how much electricity do I get for my 100 Rand? Do I get 48 units? Do I get 98 units? Does it depend what time of the month I buy my electricity? If I buy 20,000 Rand of electricity, am I going to be charged a bulk price? Is it cheaper to buy at 20 Rand a time? This is where it affects the people on the street. Not as politicians, the people on the street who can't afford to put food in their mouths, never mind pay for electricity. Chairperson, it's quite simple. We never thought we'd get it right to stop state capture. We never thought we would get a draft to have a commission of inquiry into Eskom and state capture at Eskom, and we got a draft. Chair, there is no reason why, in a country such as South Africa, we cannot sit down and be pragmatic in our approach to the stopping of the spending of billions and billions of rands that we don't have by looking at ways in which we can improve productivity at Eskom. There are companies all around the world that produce electricity through various means that are chomping at the bit to buy shares at Eskom. And it is ideology that is holding us back. We must be very frank about that. And it matters not if you're a socialist and I'm a liberal, or you're a communist and I'm a liberal. That matters not. What matters is this. 450 billion rand in debt is unsustainable. At Redupi and Kusile, we are now running into amounts that go over 300 billion rand for two power stations. Two power stations that are still going to require extra work, that are still going to require gas desulfurization fuels to be built. This is just the beginning of the problems. The Honourable Saracen asked what actions are being taken. That's a very good question. Because Mitsubishi Hitachi, that has as their BEE partner, Chancellor House, which is the investment wing of the ANC, was found to be the primary cause of the bad construction of boilers at Redupi. Where do we sit? Why is the government not actively pursuing these charges and these court actions? Chair, if we don't sit down rationally as politicians and decide, do we put our political ideologies aside and do we put South Africans first, we are going to continue coming back. Because, Chair, I want to give you, just as my closing remark, three examples. The cost of coal that Eskom paid in billions in the year 2017 was 10 billion. In 2019, 58.5 billion. Employee costs, which is what happens when the state uses a state-owned entity as an employment agency. Employment costs went from 9.5 billion rand in 2007 to 33.3 billion rand in 2019. And Chair, most worrying of all, and this is where I'll close, is that debt securities and borrowings in 2007 were 40.5 billion rand, and in 2019, 640.610 billion rand.
Who's next? Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, let me use this opportunity also to acknowledge the Minister and the Deputy Minister. Chairperson, I think following the I'm Honorable Njadu from the Select Committee of Operations. Following the presentation, Chairperson, I think it's very well outlined in terms of the depth, the revenue, the cost and operations of Eskom, and which is, when we look it at the presentation itself, and also we take the experience that we had in terms of load shedding and the progress that is being made in terms of the turnaround. I would simply say, Chair, if you look at the electricity is like crime, it's affecting poor and rich. So I think it's very important that we look at it in that context, that when we look in terms of the turnaround, Chair, in terms of the financial debt support and also the financial revenue management and cost initiatives, and also to look at the turnaround in terms of operational stability, I think it's giving us a clear direction as to how this problem of Eskom to be resolved. So, Chairperson, I think in the simple is that the turnaround strategy to support and to give the plan in terms of giving us resolving the issue of Eskom. Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Next. No. Honorable Tutu. Thank you, Chair. Chair, Minister, Deputy Ministers. With regards to the improved collection from municipalities and specifically municipalities and Soweto, as with the figures shown to us in the presentation, the 19.9 billion for municipalities and about 15 to 18 billion for Soweto. I want to know what measures are in place to ensure the approval of collection from these entities. That's the one question. Secondly, I want to know if you could maybe allude to the current price per ton that's paid on coal. We just want to see what is the current rate at which bulk supply is being delivered to Eskom. And thirdly, if you could give us more information with regards to the invoice dates and the payment dates, invoice dates for municipal accounts from Eskom to the municipalities, and the dates on which payments are received or done by municipalities to Eskom. Because according to my knowledge, there's about 14 days that lapse between the invoice date and the payment date, and that contributes to large amounts of interest that is then put on those amounts. So obviously the amounts due by municipalities to Eskom isn't in effect reflecting the true amount that is payable.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Dennis Joseph from the Democratic Alliance and from the Appropriations Committee. I just would like, I'm covered by most of the questions, but just want clarity on the 7% for employee benefits over 3 years, which was mentioned. I would like to know if this appropriations that this request that covers that 7% over 3 years. The salaries, the benefits, the performance bonuses. I would like to know if that includes that. And then I would like to know, the comment was mentioned about the municipalities, in particular versus Soweto. Seems to me Soweto on its own, this one clarity, owes similar or more than what municipalities are owing. Just want to have clarity on that. And then the other countries that we provide electricity for, do they owe us money or are they on par with the payments? Just clarity on that. Then I would like to know from Eskom if they are losing the battle on crime and theft, because we've heard about what's happening out there in the field, and what is the is it factored into the cost, you know, lost in the next 3 to 5 medium term? How does the budget work there? Because it's a reality that we do on a daily basis lose money because of theft. I would like to know, the last question, Chairperson, is the completion of the power stations, Medupi and Kalushi. I've heard almost like 5 years to complete, you know, and the history was given why there's poor workmanship and all the things that we've heard, procurement. But I would like to know, what is the projected cost for the next 5 years to complete the power stations? Thank you, Jay.
Shamira, it doesn't look like somebody attended to the aircon. It's getting hotter and hotter. I know the issues are getting hotter. Can you try and attend to that? Next, command.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me join in welcoming the presentation by Eskom, and maybe to ask the question that we have always been asking in terms of the revenue owed by the municipalities, because Eskom has presented that the auditors have also rejected that as revenue. And in terms of the presentations that we have been receiving here, we have been told that some of this debt has been since pre-democracy. But then we would want to ask as to how old would that be to be rendered as not being revenue friendly, because now we receive this that the auditors also have indicated that this cannot be set as revenue, but that does that mean that we are losing the battle of getting this revenue from the municipalities? And then there another cost for concern is the escalating cost at Kutsile and Medupi, Chairperson. And the Chairperson, I would also want to ask as to how will the this restructuring impact on the labor force, and that what remedial actions will be taken if that would have bad implication on that? And then, again, given that the chairperson has indicated that the seed capture and irregular process has impacted on the downfall of Eskom, if I may put it that way, what is Eskom doing to address that? Because we still have some of those companies still doing business with Eskom. And then, again, because we are seated here, Eskom is crying for assistance. What is it that they, particularly the management of Eskom, assisting in taking responsibility? Because when you request help, you would as well be seen as assisting the situation. Because Eskom is one of the entities which has been flagged to have got high bonuses and so forth. So how are they assisting us in this regard? And then finally, Chairperson, if one may ask, because there are contractors implicated in the undue delays and structural defects at Miduk and Kuti, are they still in any other projects, or are they still doing business with Eskom, if one may ask? Thank you, Chairperson.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to join the honourable members in thanking the ministry and the entity Eskom to come before us. But Chairperson, I think the time that we have to process this particular special appropriation and engaging with Eskom as the key stakeholder in this process is a bit limited for us. Because if and when we agree to this a request, then it means there is billions that the minister and or the ministry and Eskom will be given. And we have been given an indication that this might not be the first and last. So I'm sitting here being a worried person. But I just want to start by asking the minister. Minister, in your view, is the Department of Public Enterprises capacitated enough to deal with issues that emanate from an entity the size and responsibility of Eskom? We believe that Eskom is too important an entity for us to just have a lukewarm relationship with, and it is important that we can get to understand on whether, because the special appropriations bill does require that the DG makes the transfers to Eskom at different intervals or in different tranches, does that office have that capacity to make sure that if there will be conditions, that the conditions that are attached to this, for lack of a better word, the bailout, are actually adhered to? But also, how do we avoid a recurrence? I have heard one of the members that give an indication that there has been an improvement, but an improvement for us is a bit too lukewarm, and we need real a turnaround in terms of Eskom. I heard the chairperson speak about the 9-point plan over the 2-year period, and in one of the inputs he also spoke to the issues of primary energy, and he talks about fixing coal stockpiles there. And in the presentation, I don't hear any mention on the relationship between DPE, Eskom, and DMRE with regard to coal itself being a strategic resource. Because for us as South Africa, yes, we're working very hard at making sure that we deal with our and fix the emissions. But it is important for us to understand that for the long period, we are still going to be using coal to generate energy in South Africa. So what is it that DPE and DMRE have been able to engage on to make it possible that you can classify coal as a strategic resource? It's painful to be told that the quality of coal as a primary energy source in Eskom is of a quality that truly is actually even creating damage to the boilers as opposed to generating the necessary power to drive the turbines. And then it explains the issues that the chairperson referred to that speaks to the open cycle gas turbines and the cost thereof and the diesel cost thereof. So for me, that's some of the important aspects that I believe we need to speak to. And Minister, I would also recommend, equally so related to this capacity of GPE, that probably the DG of as much as you yourself would have a performance agreement with the President, the DG's performance agreement must also speak about how it's going to support ESCOM to make sure that this turnaround plan is implemented. I sometimes ask myself the question on whether people in leadership positions don't want to be associated in the demagogia with good things. I mean, it would be something that everybody would want to be associated with ESCOM for good reasons, not when people see ESCOM, then they start speaking like the township about HCOM. And I ask myself also on whether when we speak about the municipal debt, we ever, and also the impact of the debt or the leakage of the electricity in Soweto, we have ever gone into Soweto with a massive campaign to talk to the community of Soweto to make them understand the importance of them contributing to sustainable supply of this important energy source. Because, Chairperson, I'll make an example. I once went to an area called Bergville in KZN, and I was very impressed. I was there for a funeral. An old lady came to me to tell me that since her connection or the electricity was connected to her household, she has never paid a cent. And people were saying to her, don't report it. It's God's way of giving you a resource. But she felt it. She says, I can't sleep knowing that there are people paying and I am not paying. I'm taking this from what you said about the people in our community. And when I reported it then to the leadership in ESCOM, they intervened. And in fact, they rewarded her with an electric stove for her honesty, because for 2 years she had electricity and she didn't pay. So I say, if we can encourage a sense of responsibility, honesty in our communities, they'll come to the fore and be able to deal with this particular matter. The other thing, is it the intention of ESCOM to blacklist or to those of the major contractors or suppliers of ESCOM who are equally owing ESCOM, they are indebted to ESCOM. Yes, from time to time we are told about the debt of municipalities, but we are not given a picture of the debt that emanates from the private sector. Equally so, when we talk about the cost, I mean the theft of electricity by communities, we must also speak about the theft of electricity by a big industrial users, because we know that there are those that are not actually also paying for electricity. My colleague here says, what did you say, Cecilia? He made it in another way. But when we talk about the cost of overruns, one would want to know what is it that in this turnaround plan you intend to do that we don't get to that level. But also, what is the role of the company's ministers, those who were implicated in that corruption scandal of 2010 in the infrastructure development sector, the construction company? How many of them are actually involved and contribute to some of these cost overruns in ESCOM? And how many of them are responsible? Because I would believe that there would be many that are also implicated in the delays, I wanted to say. Because a delay then creates an opportunity for the cost overrun. So if I delay a project, then even people who do private household construction will tell you that they've been told to budget an additional 30% for being ripped off or for corruption in the construction sector. So there is probably a conscious effort from the private sector also to make sure that they pollute. That pollution, I don't think, has come to an end. It's on how to make money more out of Eskom. Then the other thing that I want to ask Eskom is with regards to the scenario that you can depict for us of factors leading to low revenue and financial loss. What is the percentage contribution of money lost to the corruption and mismanagement of irregularities? Yes, we have, Minister, heard a lot about state capture. And probably Eskom is a good example of the pre-1994 capture, the post-1994 capture, and those who are sitting gloating and salivating on the opportunity that the restructuring of Eskom would bring to them. Because there would be those who believe that there would be opportunities that they could have access to the units or the service areas that would be broken off, or the those that you call non-core. Then, Chairperson, for now, let me leave it there, but I still believe that we need a lot of time to engage. Like we said in the committee at one stage, in the joint committee, that Eskom is too important for socio-economic development of South Africa and the region for us to allow it to fail. But Eskom can also not emotionally terrorize us into allowing them to continuously get bailouts, because they know that we treat them as this important resource. They are the hand that lays the golden egg, and if they lay the golden egg, it means that there is a new hand that can emerge. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll allow Honorable... Oh, come here.
Chairperson, I think the Minister and the Chairperson, co-CEO can answer this one. The issue of the two companies in the coal, I forgot that part, in the coal provision set or procurement environment, the two companies that have got 90% of the contracts, and the 60 companies that share the 10%. I think that if we believe that we want to share the cake, this is too... It's worrying. But also because these contracts are long-term contracts, Chairperson and Minister, is it your intention, or have you started the process of renegotiating these contracts? Thank you very much.
Honorable Kumete.
Chair, if we're teaming down, I'm going to say, Yes, we have been to all corners. You know, there are no questions that we have not asked in terms of the situation or the current situation we are facing. Somebody says in New Zealand, the city, we've got now to tackle the bull by his horn. Minister, I would like to find out, in terms of the state capture, if anything is recoverable, can that save Eskom? And how much possibly that can be? Because it looks as if we keep on flagging state capture, and yes, in many instances, in many corners, the state capture, that in fact has led us to the situation where we are. Going back, is there anything that can be recovered, or nothing more can be recovered? I remember in one instance, you told us that there is something that was in fact recovered. But do we still have the potential of getting that? If a sizable, a reasonable amount could be recovered, can that save us as Eskom? Two, I'm just thinking and thinking deep. Is human settlement in this instance not implicated? Why I'm saying that is because too much of influx, too much of informal settlement, and many of them are using heavy electricity. Those are the things that in fact are not accounted for. Many of the people could be people that are coming from outside. Many of them, because they can't benefit from the subsidy. Our people here in South Africa, they build informal settlements and rent them out. So money they go to, it's a source of income to them, yes, we agree. But in as much as they use the electricity that is in fact not accounted for, doesn't that have a dent on Eskom? Doesn't that necessitate a kind of a discussion between the Minister of Human Settlement as well as our minister here? There are other, I don't know how to put this one, but with the municipality, I know that in certain times or periods, they do have rights of. How does that affect Eskom? That if I'm in areas and then the municipality, after quite a number of, it could be years or whatever, the municipality then will announce the write-offs. Those write-offs, in fact, an individual would be owing electricity so much. And then you effect that write-off, how much dent does it bear to Eskom? Because those are the things, now we must begin to look at all those Molanyana things that may end up perhaps adding value to what the crisis that we have as Eskom. Perhaps that will help us. May we explore all these avenues and let's see how much we can really try and get or perhaps save us at Eskom, because this is in fact a national crisis and which is far from being perhaps solved in a situation one would say. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair Moletsane, member of the Appropriation Committee. I just want to make a follow-up on the issue of the IPPs. I just want to check whether is it true that IPPs cost more than the coal when looking at the cost per kilowatt? And if that is the case, what is the difference? Secondly, now that it is clear that it is a clear indication that there's a decrease in sales of electricity, is Eskom producing more than what is able to sell? Again, if that is the case, can we get a sense of what is that has been happening for the past 5 years? Also, is there any legal arrangement whereby Eskom can be able to tell the IPPs to say that now that we have enough electricity and we are not going to buy from you, and we will come back to you when there's a demand? Why? Because if not that, does it make sense to buy a product that you cannot sell, but also buy it at a higher price compared to what you can spend somewhere? Lastly, are the IPPs not crippling the Eskom bank account? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'll ask the Chair, Honorable, to come in.
Thank you, Chairperson Shenyu and Likelele Mahlangu, member of the Select Committee on Appropriation. Let me join the members by welcoming the presentation, Minister and Deputy Minister. Mshem, thank you so much. And I will start from the attitude at which the presentation was at. It is really, for me as a public rep, with the mandate that I have to oversight on public entities and departments and the government as a whole, I welcome your attitude whereby you have been so open for having diagnosed the problem and putting it out there. And not just diagnose the problem, but also come up with a strategy or a plan on how to resolve it. And I also want to appreciate that I can sense that there's a political will in the leadership to make sure that we resolve this problem. Previously, what we will experience is the defense mechanism or the defense attitude. When coming to appear before the committee, there will be that attitude of saying we are going to defend. And we are at a stage where one is proud of being a South African, that we own up to our mistakes and we are prepared to resolve the mistakes. And I think to the team, Mshengu and your team and Minister, don't be discouraged when you come across some of us or the public when they take it negative towards the turnaround strategy, because we've been hearing turnaround strategies all along and they haven't made an impact. And I'm happy that the members of different parties are in this mode also, that we are not politicizing the matter. We are focusing on the ball and we are not playing the man. I really appreciate that very much, that we work as a team. We want to resolve this not in the interest of whichever party, but in the interest of the electorate, the citizens of South Africa. In your presentation, Mshengu, you spoke about Medupi, and I know members have spoken about it, Medupi and Kusile, and you have committed to a 5-year period that it would, they will be completed in 5 years. And I'm appealing to the committee when we are going to, because today we are listening to your presentations, we are asking questions for clarity and whatever, that when we go to back to a joint session where we are going to take decisions about this bill, we understand what we are finding. We must own up to the 5 years. And we must be able to hold you accountable to the 5 years. Because this has been a nightmare to everyone. To everyone. So we are going to hold you accountable to that. And as appropriations committee family, both select committee and standing committee, we have been very clear when we were speaking to Treasury that these bailouts are not going to be a blank check. The bailouts must be conditional, and those conditions must be clear. They must be crystal clear, and they must be measurable, so that us as oversight body, we want to oversight you. Like Honorable Mazori has said, it doesn't help to give out bailouts. It's like it's a norm. It becomes a norm. and you do things as normal, as usual, and thinking the shareholder being government is going to bail us out because we are too important to can let us down or to can let us die. Also on your presentation, Mshengu, you spoke about pain, and when you were speaking about it, I looked at you and you seemed like you meant it. Government must expect pain, will go through pain. Eskom will go through pain. And if you say Eskom, I think you talk about the employees as well. And at some stage I said restructuring at all times have casualties. And over again we have been asking about maybe we must not talk about, we must not talk with times, Honorable Chairperson, and just be straight. Like the organized labor have been saying, do we expect any loss of jobs? The first honorable member here, he spoke about it, and other members, they spoke about it, a member from EFF also. The interest or the concern that we are having, we know with the experience that we have, and hence we have raised it, and we were assured that it will not happen, and we will want another assurance. Remember, we are talking about the appropriation bill, the money that we must give out, if we agree. And we need to understand all these things. Who is going to benefit from this money? Will there be value for money? Will we put money at Eskom and still have a loss of jobs? How is it going to contribute to the economy, the bailout that we are talking about? So I want to understand the level of pain and at what direction is it going to take. Honorable Chairperson, you have also questioned us about time. I think we have learned a hard lesson. You have spoken also about the infrastructure that is aging. And I always sound like a scratched LP. I'm not going to say a CD because I'm that old. I'll talk about an LP. When it's crashed, I don't know what you need to do. That the impact of having producing or developing an infrastructure project without a maintenance plan, the impact is very huge because you don't understand that infrastructure itself, the lifespan, the time at which you have to intervene, when to plan, to budget for it. So as we intervene, we must also have and we complete the Kusile and Midupi power stations. We must also have maintenance plans so that we can be directed by those plans and budget for them and maintain so that our great-grandchildren cannot experience what we are experiencing today. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Before I allow the chairperson to come in, the minister to come in, just to say we decided to be all here today as a first bite to the issue. The different committees will still follow up with Eskom. The issues, as you can see, are varied, complex, and so on. And with the little time that we have, we can't be able to be exhaustive. Just to make sure that we are in the same wavelength, we said that for public enterprises here, and we've got two committees on appropriation. The portfolio committee public enterprise is responsible for all issues in that in that department. Appropriations, just to make sure again, the money that is being appropriated, the budget is going to be used by national government, must go through this committee. What just like the subcommittee of the board. So what a subcommittee of National Assembly and COP respectively would deal with anything that was appropriated. So as an appropriation committee, when a special appropriation bill comes, or any appropriation bill managed going to be used by National comes through this committee. That's what that means to make sure that why are we so much concerned about what is happening. So again, all these committees are still going to have the second bite and the third bite and the fourth bite and the fourth bite. The time of is not enough. Just to add on your plate, Chair, so much has been said about the CRO, and we seem to put so much reliance on the CRO. And from where we are, and the person again has been employed is a financial person, so we will be able to deal with financial issues. But the issues when we listen to are more than financial. There are so much engineering problems and so on and so forth. What do you want to do with that? Just to take you back 2008-2009, global economic crisis was because of the world depended so much on financial engineers, not real engineers. So just to make sure to allay our fears that we don't find ourselves in that problem. The question of the debt, Chair, can we understand it from the municipalities? They've got about 20 billion rand debt, but their debt is around 38 billion rand. What's your data book and the age thereof? And coupled with that, for example, your IRFS issues. When do they become bad debt? Okay, that's another thing that I would like to throw in. And can you share with us your main cost driver at ESCOM? And the story behind those cost drivers, but I think if we can have your top five cost drivers and appropriate percentages of thereof. And how has those costs changed in the past 5 years? So, perhaps others have been going down, others have been decreasing. We this one has been coming on time and again that the tariff changes or increases have not been in line with the cost, or they have not been cost effective. I'll tell you what we've been hearing from the municipalities and the people there. They are saying ESCOM and government expect us to pay for their inefficiency. Tariffs have been going up and up, and things have not been improving at ESCOM. These things you want to throw those things at us and then blame us and say you don't want to pay. So I would like to hear your comment as far as that is concerned. Yeah, those would be my few questions. And as you said, we are very much aware that we have thrown so much. I think the questions that have been thrown to you may need the whole day, but please deal with some very important questions. And I would request my colleagues from other portfolio committees to follow up on some of the questions which may not be exhaustive. And just to underline the one which has been said, Comrade Minister and DM, the big thing of all this is that we are waiting for and very much eager to see the plan that is coming, that will be announced by the President, so that we can know exactly what is it that we are funding, and then we can be in a position to intelligently engage with the plan and make some recommendations. Thank you.
I'll start, Chair, and Thanks to the honourable members for the various questions. We have answers to most, and some we might have to defer to get the information that you require. The first point I want to make, Chair, is that state capture as a concept sounds very easy to deal with. When you get into an organization, state capture you see in real terms. The breaking of systems, the breaking of discipline, the breaking of culture, which then begin to impact, as many of you have correctly pointed out, on the questions of operational discipline. This is an engineering organization, right, which requires engineering discipline. So once that discipline breaks down, then the productivity of the plant begins to break down. And I think some of you made reference to this. That begins to then impact on the question of finances. But as many of you pointed out, a related question, which is now today internationally known, is that corruption and what we call capture in South Africa happens mainly in these circumstances through the procurement process. So if I remember the slogan well, which I learned at an anti-corruption conference last year, corruption is the name and procurement is the game. Corruption is the name and procurement is the game. So if you look at Honorable Gumede's question, what is recoverable? There's a lot that's recoverable. Depends on whether the forensics have been done, whether the hawks have done their investigative work, and whether the prosecuting authority is ready to prosecute. In the last year, as a department, we've collected some 3,000 forensic reports from just 7 entities. Now, to process all of that and make sure that there's action taken against either the entities or individuals concerned is still a massive task that needs to be accomplished. But as the Chair will point out in a moment, in the case of Eskom, various recoveries have taken place. But there's a lot more that can actually be done. Just one senior manager in Eskom was involved in a deal involving R1 billion. When and if that person comes to court, you'll know what that person did. But it's well known informally. As to how that happened and why that happened and what the mechanics of that. That's just one manager. Now, they say the fish rots from the head. So once you see somebody above you stealing, then why, you'll ask the question, why can't I steal too? And make merry. So the destruction in Eskom and in other entities is quite a serious one. The second point, Chairperson, is the imbalance, as the Chair pointed out, between costs and revenue. So if you're not making enough money, then you can't cover your costs. And if you then have corruption in the procurement process or in the development of Medupi and Kusile, which many of you have raised, and perhaps what we should agree, there's a separate report we should come with, which is more analytical about Medupi and Kusile and what went wrong. And perhaps the Public Enterprises Committee can convene all of you in that particular regard. But that imbalance then accumulates over a period of time, because you just one year's loss then acts as a base for the next year's loss. But we've been saying to the Eskom management team and the Eskom board that we can't take these costs for granted. So the last point that you made, why must we pay for Eskom's cost structure, is a valid point, and many of you have raised the question, are you reviewing all the contracts? Are you checking what happened there in some of the construction processes? Are you reviewing all of the coal contracts? And more recent discoveries, now this is anecdotal, so I must still confirm that, shows that some suppliers of coal could be making somewhere between 75 and 100% profit. Right? So this is a commercial world, a world where if there's a shortage, you'll capitalize on it and make sure that you get more than your pound of flesh out of this exercise. So, firstly, the capture impact and culture and so on. Secondly, the cost versus revenue. Thirdly, the structure of the costs themselves. There's a lot more work to be done in this particular regard. Whether it is the coal supplies, whether it is the human resource benefits, of senior managers, other managers, there's lots of reviews that I think still need to be done, whether it is the procurement systems for not just coal, because Eskom procures more than just coal. It procures turbines, it procures spare parts for all sorts of equipment, all of which is possibly contaminated by one of these malfeasances that we're actually talking about at the end of the day. So I want to agree with honorable members who actually say that we should leave so-called ideology behind. Let's take a pragmatic approach. But when you see the damage that has been done to a state-owned entity, and there are others that similar damage has been done, so don't be surprised. Some of you said, you know, bailouts is not something that we're going to take kindly to. Well, we have to make a choice then, both as a country and as a government. When the level of damage that has been incurred or imposed upon these institutions, do you want them to collapse? Do you want them to be stabilized at some level? Are there possibilities of recovery so that you can get something out of these assets? There are some assets that nobody will pay us a cent for as it sits today. You'll hear about it soon. Right? You won't get a cent, but you'll have to pay anything between 15 and 20 billion rands if you want somebody to take it over. That's the reality of state capture. So again, I mean state capture in the broader sense, whether it's stealing, mismanagement, appointing incompetent people, getting rid of good people in the system, all of that is part of this mix. So when Honorable Mazzoni says there's companies all over the world who want to buy a share in Eskom, I expect a list from her now. So tell me who they are and what is it that they're interested in and what are they going to invest in? Because it'll be lovely to compare notes and have a look at some of those things. Yes, I think there are possibilities for recovery from the original equipment manufacturers, whether it is at the level of maintenance and plant repairs or whether it is in terms of the new construction. We've met several times, by the way, with coal suppliers, twice. Once on our own, once with the Minister of Mineral Resources, to get this community on board. To say, firstly, we can't have this erratic supply, which was happening last year, because you might recall, honorable members, that the export price of coal about 2 years ago was great, $100 and more a ton. It's now dropped below 60, I think. I haven't seen the most recent number. Which means it's more attractive. It was more attractive then to export coal. It's not as attractive to export coal, partly because many countries that we are exporting to are themselves engaging in massive renewable projects. So they don't need coal to the extent that we need it. So yes, we've got to come back and ask the question, particularly through the integrated resource plan, what is the position of coal? And as that plan goes through the various approval processes, you know, it'll guide us in terms of the mix between nuclear, coal, gas, and other forms, including renewables as well. Procurement is certainly an area that a lot more work can be done in this particular respect. The municipal debt, the colleagues from Eskom can deal with that. I think it needs to be disaggregated, as some of you pointed out. What is the core capital amount? What is the age analysis, as you, Chair, and others have actually asked for? And in commercial terms, as some of you might know, once debt is more than 60 days old, it's very difficult to collect. So what are we waiting for, and how do we manage this exercise is something that the Eskom colleagues can respond to. In relation to the special paper which the President announced, sometime during the course of this month, hopefully, that will be published by the President. But it's in his hands, and it will be reasonably comprehensive in terms of addressing some of the key issues. There's an important concept that we haven't discussed, Chairperson, and that is the just transition, which is an important part of the energy debate, both globally and in South Africa. It has two broad components. The one is in relation to shifting away from fossil fuels, which is a global phenomenon, although there's still technology difficulties in terms of renewables. But battery technology is moving fast, so we need to be alive to what that, what those developments are and how we accommodate those developments in our own realm. So the second part of the first part, if you want to put it that way, is something that Eskom is under huge pressure for at the moment, and that is how does it mitigate the emissions from the older plants that we actually have, particularly in the Mpumalanga area. And many of you would have read about that. And Eskom has fallen behind in this particular regard. So, but on the other hand, it's very expensive. I think the estimates are between 150 and 170 billion rand to put in the technology that's required. So in the constrained environment that we find ourselves in, how we deal with that is a crucial question. The second component of a just transition is how do government and other entities prepare workers for a non-fossil fuel future? And that's where the question of jobs begins to come up as well. The President has said quite clearly there won't be job losses. What we have to put in place as a government and as Eskom is a machinery which will enable workers to adapt to the renewable industry as we go on. So there are power stations that are now 55 years old, like Kruitvlei. Three of the units, I think, are already closed. Three are operational. They don't have more than a 2 or 3 year future as we stand. And getting them to work again is, according to the engineers, I'm not an engineer, an expensive exercise. So we have to then migrate to possibly getting investment in renewable energy in that area, migrate workers to other power stations or to a new working life and a new set of skills in relation to solar installations or other technology that is appropriate to that particular environment. So when we, Chairperson, look at the question of so-called bailouts, in some instances, bailouts, I think, must be carefully monitored and criticized as well, where there's deliberate mismanagement or negligence. In other instances, provided there's, as you correctly point out as well, lots of these entities have turnaround plans. Not all of them get implemented. In some instances, we're good at producing a turnaround plan, but have no capacity whatsoever to implement a turnaround plan in the management team. That's what we are confronted at the moment. And so some extraordinary measures need to be taken in order to get the implementation done. So I think your point about conditions and having them to be measurable are important points that you actually make. And the pushback as far as Eskom is concerned to get greater efficiencies into its system and operations is an important pushback that the Eskom management will need to communicate to their staff as well. Is the department capacitated enough? The department itself was the center of state capture. It orchestrated it. It is the one that through which board members were appointed, management was shifted around and appointed and so on. So if one has to be frank, what are we talking about here? So, yes, we are also in the process of rebuilding the capacity of the department so that it is able to have the kind of oversight that is actually necessary. Can we avoid a recurrence, as Honorable Peters, former minister, says? Can anybody give a guarantee? Because there's human beings involved here. Whatever T-shirt we wear, there's no guarantees. But we must do the best we can to inculcate a culture that will ensure that recurrence is not as easy as it might have been over the last 7 or 8 years. The quality of coal, I think the Eskom colleagues can talk about that. It certainly was an issue last year. It did do damage to the plant in several instances. And the whole supply chain seemed to be contaminated. In other words, you can deliver rubble and stone and it will be regarded as coal and signed off at a power station. So we have instances of that. You might have seen some of these video clips moving around in that particular regard. On the question of a campaign to get the culture of payment going again, Chair, I think parliamentarians have an important role here as well. So I think if we put all of our heads and hands together, we do need to change the culture of payment and the culture of compliance in the country. But that's not an Eskom matter alone. It's a question of a national culture. And as the chair was pointing out, if we don't put a stop to that culture now, it'll spread and certainly impact on the fiscus in a serious way. Our construction companies of the past involved now, I think there's some colleagues can look at that question. Similarly, the ministry doesn't get involved, nor does the department, in signing off contracts with suppliers, so they can tell you whether those numbers of 90% and 10% are actually accurate. But what we will certainly do is to look at whether we're getting the best possible price that we can actually get. IPPs, they can give you the numbers, but I think what we must accept, Chairperson, is that worldwide there's an energy transition taking place. South Africa can't be left behind. If you remember, there's this UN report, was 2 weeks ago, which identified the area around the Kriel power station as a high-emission area, but also a dangerous health hazard for people living in that area through the kind of sulfur and other pollutants that the power station is emitting at this point in time. So it's now an international issue, and there are court cases and so on that we are confronted with as well. So the early IPPs did cost more. As I said, the colleagues can provide you with the numbers, but all the evidence now is that the cost of IPPs, or other renewables, is cheaper than the cost of coal or any other source of energy. Madupi and Kusidi have made reference to earlier on. Right, so maybe the chair can start taking over. On the separation issue into particularly transmission, we're working through the details at the moment with Eskom and the department, and we'll make sure that as part of the process of the president preparing that paper, looking after people becomes an important component as well. But if you look at the numbers, some of you have asked of staff, at Eskom, there was an explosion from about 2011, 2012, where some 10,000 might have been added, if not a little bit less. He'll give you the numbers, but that did happen. And the question is, who instructed that to happen, and what were the consequences that we are bearing today as a result of that? Covered most, Chair, so let me hand over to Mr. Mabuza, and whatever he leaves out and his colleagues leave out, I'll come back to. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Thanks, Minister. As I come to questions that the Minister has already covered, I will skip. Quite a lot of questions. Chair, there may well be a need that some of these questions, the detailed answers, we may have to find another way of giving, if it's okay, in some other format. The quick on the cost escalation in Gusile and Medupi, the minister has touched on this, but we having two numbers that we're using. One that says if 80% of the assumptions that we put in materialize, this is the number at the end of the period. If we only hit 50% of that, the number is slightly less. So, for the purposes of this presentation, we say it would cost us by the time we've completed Medupi, it would have cost 145 billion, and Gusile 161 billion. That is, if 80% of the risks that there materialize. If 50% of those risks materialize, only 50% materialize, the numbers are 10 billion rand less. So I just think it's important that members understand these are some of the, these are the ranges that we're working on. In Middle Peak, it's 135 or 145. In Gusile, it's 156 or 161. The cost of IPPs, in broad terms, we can go into details. It contributes 5% on our production. It contributes 24% to the cost. It's 5% to our capacity, and it's 23% to cost. Yeah, there's a question about do we have the right people? Are we planning? I think it would be inappropriate for me to sit here and say we don't have the right people. It's too early for me to say that. But there is no doubt that with the emerging technologies, the new challenges that are in the organization, face the organization, the number of people that have left the organization voluntarily, pushed out, or being suspended, we have had lost some skills. There are people that have stepped up to the plate, some too soon. Clearly, there would have to be a program that seeks to address the reskilling, upskilling, and retraining of our people. But there may well also be a need to inject some people from either the top or the sides of the organization. Headcount, the minister has just referred to it, but the numbers that I've looked at, 10 years ago we had 32,000 people, 10 years later we had 48,000 people. The numbers have been flattening over the last 2 years. So on bonuses paid the last 10 years, I'll have to find those numbers. Suffice to say, we have entered into a three-year wage deal with labor for the bargaining unit, where we've agreed to a seven-year pay year for 3 years, 2018, 2019 to 2021. These are financial years. Middle management increases last year was inflation, about 4.7%. Senior management was zero. For this year, it's the bargaining unit is on the it's year two of the 3 years, so it's 7% or 7.5%, but it's a three-year agreed deal. And senior middle management, we're currently consulting. We are consulting within the confines of what the state of the company is, the state of the economy, and indeed some directives that we have gotten from cabinet and government on this. We're consulting there. Those increases come in October. So we're currently in consultation with middle management. Senior management is zero. There have been no bonuses that were paid for the year 2018. There is no bonuses budgeted to be paid for the year 2019-20. Bonuses are part of a scheme, Chairperson, that has got very clear targets and very clear rules. Simply put, there are three targets. One is profitability. The other one is qualified audit, and the third one is achieving 80% of our shareholder compact. The last 2 years we have missed all three. So there are no bonuses earned and there are no bonuses payable. On the tariff, the amount of corruption and inefficiency in there, we fully acknowledge that part of the benefit we hope to derive from the separation is to be to have the transparency of what it costs to run each of these businesses. So I I can only continue to say, going forward, we continue to drive the organization towards a zero-based type of a budgeting, so that we can, at the end of a period, say, we have not spent this, we did not need it. So that would require a daily, hourly, monthly, weekly, quarterly, half-yearly focus on cost. So for now, the tariffs are a function of the current cost structure. Special paper, we did indicate the president will announce that. Honourable Iman Sheikh Iman, we are looking at these evergreen contracts. We are currently caught up in a situation that the way we should be dealing with our contracts and our procurement, one, we need to find a different philosophy and a different policy position, so that we don't have start-stop. Short-term contracting is an expensive exercise. In various decisions that we've taken in the past as management and leadership of ESCOM to walk away from long-term contracts, either because we were not prepared to maintain the cost-plus mines that we are contracted to buy for, or we were driven by other reasons that has made us to cancel contracts. But short-term contract is not the answer. That said, it should not be the cover for not doing empowerment. If we accept that we should buy at good price, good quality, good service levels, there should be no discounting or acceptance of substandards on quality, price, and delivery because we're going to augment for that in trying to, as a black business person, I find that actually quite insulting, that we have to be paid more for less. We have to be paid more for less quality. I think that should not come into the place. The policy has to be ensured that it lowers the barrier to entry so that black business can also supply. That's what it should be. That is the policy, the contracting, and the management. Our debt situation, yes, there is a various factors in there. Time, there is interest in some of these debts. We have, following various meetings with the standing committees, Biscopa and Portfolio Committee, gone back. So these numbers are not with numbers of debt that should have prescribed. They also don't have what do you call that, andulum or pendulum, whatever, when the interest is more than the capital. Where we have sought to tidy that up. The municipal debt, the question is why we're not collecting. Some of it has been because there's just been violently risky for our members to go to the areas, to go and look at the exploded transformers, to audit the cost of the transformers. Some of this we've not been able to put in the meters. And some of this is because of the various disputes that we've been having, either with the customers that have taken us to court and or some of the constitutional issues that we've gotten into about our ability on who should reticulate between COCTA and ourselves. So the problems are multifaceted. And indeed, some of them have to do with the social, political considerations. Yeah, we agree that there is need to the organization can be an agile one. The organization can be repurposed in a positive sense to get the agency to focus on the things that need to be done. There is nothing that is wrong with our people that they can't be led and directed to they need to be led, They need to be managed. They need to be held to deliver clearly set up goals and be held accountable for that. On the question of the turnaround, let me allow what the minister has said to stay, and let's wait for the paper from the president. Honorable Schneider, I think I hope I'm calling the name correctly. I fully agree. Eskom lost the trust of South Africans. Eskom would have to regain. They must earn that trust again. It takes time to build trust. It's quick to lose it. We fully appreciate that. We certainly, as the leadership of Eskom, are saddened and regret the state of the relationship that we have with society that it doesn't trust us. We fully understand it. We've earned the mistrust we've got. So we're working our way up to re-end the trust. We appreciate the oversight. And we also would commit ourselves, if we have agreed to conditions, we will meet those conditions. Mm. And we would want to be held to account for those conditions. Indeed, we will report regularly. The declining sales, we fully appreciate that there comes a time when the price becomes the reason why it affects sales, the price elasticity I spoke about. It's true. It is a double whammy. It is a double whammy that at the end of the day, the consumer is the taxpayer that we're coming back to, whether by tariff or by shareholder support. But we're hoping we'll reach a particular point one day where there is no more debate as to what is it that goes into our costing engineering. Once we've settled on that, we hope we would reach a stage that it's only inflation that would come into the factor. But we're far from that point. I'm sorry that my point about not finding the cost meant that I said we should not look for the cause. What I meant was that the pressures we currently have now, we've got to stabilize the patient. Once the patient is sitting up taking liquid, we can go back and say, who bewitched this patient? If we can do the two things at the same time, so be it. But our focus now is to get the organization, operationally at least, to continue to produce electricity whilst we're looking for ways of how new opportunities we can take, and it's a question of focus and a question of appropriating our own resources and focus. We have not stopped trying to collect where we can. We have not stopped to clean up where we can, but it's more our focus now is keeping the lights on whilst we're building the capacity of the power station to produce to acceptable. It was never meant to say, let it be. We definitely are far from that. We're continuously reviewing the contract. I have asked the executive committee of Eskom to each of the lines to bring their top 10 contracts. Tell me who in their top 10 contracts is expiring when, and what are they planning to do about that? What are their level of happiness about the service levels? Because part of the problem is in that contract management. Contract management cannot be the business of for the procurement officer. Each of the businesses that demand these services and supplies, they must own and manage their contracts. So we are continuously reviewing the contracts on their relevance, and indeed value for money is a key part of what drives us. Yeah, Honorable Swart, when we were under pressure of diesel, we had to take it from whence we found. Diesel is also very expensive. If it costs 70 cents to produce on coal, 210 cents on IPPs is 3 rand on diesel. So diesel is very, very expensive. And these turbines were never meant, diesel was never meant to be based. So that is a problem. So once we sorted the supply as we currently are, we continue to engage with the main suppliers ranging from Petro SA, SA to Sasol and the major oil companies. Peggy will talk about the coal stock levels at the point, but our only problem is with green. We are not below the green coal. Green is there's a specific issue in the underground capacity. The quality that we currently are getting, with all the problems it has to the burner, which the Honorable Peters has referred to, the quality that we currently have as a problem in our power station is, in the quest to push coal stock levels, we took any coal we could get. And in the throwing our net as wide as we did, everything there was fish. With having stock levels being put where they are, also our scales, our weighbridge have not been properly calibrated at certain times, and we may need to spend some money on technology that we don't have to only find that it was a rock when it burst the boilers. The issue of road transportation, once more, there are now contracts that we now have to, your contractor to get the supply. You've also seen the fight we get from road haulers when we don't. And this can never just be cut at the top. We need to go back to why we had decided to move away from the original model of coal, fire, powered, generated electricity in South Africa, which was you're going to build power station on top of coal fields. You'll belt convey coal from underground to the burners and transport electricity. Now we're transporting coal to transport electricity. So the costs, and indeed the various coal power stations were built on certain quality of coal fit for that particular power station. So there is unfortunately a need to do a little bit more and it will take a little bit longer to reverse what was purposefully done to get us to the point we are at. I did speak about the cost to Medupi, and the minister did respond to how we're dealing with the contracts. A bit of a challenge here is even as they build, the contractors and some defects come about or they cause a certain problem, you have to pay them to continue whilst you put on a book that you're going to come back and deal with this problem. Because I need to litigate against you. So I either stop this work, we litigate, once the court has decided who's culpable, we'll come back. Or you say we want to complete this, we'll come back and claim damages at a point. That's the kind of problems we find ourselves in designing a power station whilst it's production and it's in production and it's hot. On the emissions, I am not aware of a executive decision taken to say turn off the filters so that we can save by outages. But we'll get we'll need to get some specifics and go back to that. Yeah, fully agree with the Eskom is our biggest risk. We are committed to put in the gas. The statistics Honorable Mazzoni has put in on the table, it's true, it's fact. I have added the numbers there. The spoken about the municipal debt, the 38 billion is made of 19 from municipal, 18 from Soweto, and 2.5 from other customers, and just under a billion from international. I think the big issue here, Chair, is the 19 from municipality was 13 billion last year. It's gone up by 6 billion, which is 500 million every month. The Soweto debt was 15 billion, it's gone up by 3 billion. So it's 18 billion now. We'll come back to you on the invoice dates and the payment dates. I've spoken to Honorable Joseph's questions. The only one of the international customers, Zimbabwe, is paying as per agreed terms. We having some challenges with some of the customers, like in Mozambique. But in relative terms, the numbers are not that huge. But we do have some challenges with some areas where the private supplier customers in Zambia do pay, but some of the government debts are a bit problematic. Midupi will see the completion date. Midupi 2020. When I spoke about 5 years, that 5 years includes the 3 years of fixing the defect. So Midupi is 2020. Wusile is 2022. So when we say it would take 5 years, it's including some of the defects that have either came from design or the latent defects that come about as we go forward. Costs, two main cost drivers for Eskom is primary energy and people and debt, three. We're spending a lot of time about that. That's why we're having this conversation here. People's costs a bit more difficult. It is a function of decisions we've taken in the past, and we have to also bear in mind the president has drawn a line in the sand that we've got to do everything that we can not to retrench people. So in the costs that we committed to save, building up to 33 billion per year by 2023. We're working on the basis that we should get some benefits from natural attrition, and we may have to look at voluntary separation. Those are also a function of what you can afford outside to pay people to leave, even though you're going to get a gain in the future, but also in its nature. Only those that have somewhere to go, you're going to lose. So it's not a silver bullet. But within the constraints of you don't have to retrench, we need to continuously find other ways of saving costs. No bonuses, I spoke about that. Indeed, the minister has spoken at length about the impact of state capture at Eskom. It would take time to root it out. Also very difficult to prove. I've spoken about IPPs. I also, Minister spoke to Mkwezane Mdungu Siyathokoza, Minister Upendulile. I think I have covered most of the questions I have noted. Kalip, you want to talk a bit more about some of the IPP issues, and then with your indulgence, Chair, I'll ask the head of generation to deal with the issue of coal specifically.
Thank you. Okay, just before you come in, we must go up to Korapas already over time. Just try to cover everything, and Chair, you said some of the things that you couldn't provide figures on. I think you can send those things back to us in writing.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think on the IPPs, although as the Chairman has said that it's like three times the cost of generation production, one must understand that in the tariff, that is a pass-through, so the consumer is paying for that. And from an Eskom cash flow, we are recovering that in the tariff. I think that's an important point to acknowledge. Chairperson, you asked what is the cost base of Eskom over the last 5 years. Our total cost base has increased from a total in 2014 of 116 billion rand That includes your primary energy of 70 billion, your employee costs of 25 billion and 19 billion on operating costs, to 150 billion in 2019, made up of the 99 billion, as the chair said, 33 billion on employee costs, and your other OPEX was 18 billion. On average per annum over the last 5 years, it adds up to about 5%. I think what's also important to highlight to the committee is that our capital cost in the height of our new builds, in 2014 we spent 60 billion. In 2019, the last financial year, we spent 37 billion. And maybe on the positive side, in 2014, when we went through the difficulties of meeting supply and demand, open cycle gas turbine costs were 11 billion in that year. In the last financial year, it was 4 billion rand. And maybe to the one honorable member, based on the performance of the generation fleet thus far, we see that based on quarter one results, our diesel usage is much lower than budget. I think we are benefiting by about 3 billion thus far. So that's the positive. Chair, I think those are things on our highlight. Thank you.
Chair, there would be no need. Peggy is okay. I feel we've covered this issue. There's just one comment to your question, Chair, in conclusion. We fully understand that the CROs and the work that deals with the debt, the financial side, the operational side is what management is working on. What we presented about what we're going to do on revenue, what we're going to do on cost, is what we're going to be doing, and also how we our 9-point plan does with the actual operation and production of electricity. Thank you.
Comrade Minister.
Thank you very much for this opportunity, Chair. Eskom, let me repeat, is vital to this economy and the country. There will be an Eskom into the future. Its shape will be probably different 3, 4, 5 years from now. And we are, together with the management and the 48,000 people that work at Eskom, and I'm sure with the support from many of you, going to make sure that this project succeeds, as difficult as it might be. So thank you for your support, and hopefully we've answered the questions as frankly as we could, and where the supplementary information is required, we'll make sure that's provided. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. If there's one thing that we really would like to underline, Comrade Minister Chair, and which we would like to support, is the position that we are taking as far as jobs protection is concerned, right? Because sometimes we don't appreciate the impact of job losses, let alone for the individuals, but there are got implications on SARS, on what we collect, because people that we're collecting revenues from, they are now lesser. Therefore, it also talks to the question of our spending, what's happening to aggregate demand, and therefore the potential of growing the economy. It also speaks to the sustainability of the fiscal framework. So I'm just saying that we would like really to encourage that we try, while we are busy trying to create jobs somewhere, the president announced on the creation of jobs, but it's also important that we do protect the jobs that we are having. Obviously, we're not just going to keep people for the sake of it. We want to get some return and on that investment on human capital. Allow me then, honourable members, colleagues, I think what we got today is a helicopter view of what is happening there. With the best of intention, there was no way going to get everything. As we said, Chair, we will be following up at different committees without distracting you from your work. But at the same time, we have got work that we need to do ourselves. So we'll try to get a healthy balance as far as that is concerned. Allow me to thank Honorable Mashang and Honorable Makaka, Honorable Members, Appropriations, Public and Enterprises, Minister, Deputy Minister, Chair, and your team. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.